Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Crush Videos, Congress, and the First Amendment edition. Thank you for tuning in. On April 20th, 2010, the Supreme Court announced its decision in United States v. Stevens. The question in this case was whether 18 U.S.C. 48, which prohibits the commercial creation, sale, or possession of certain depictions of animal cruelty, violates the Freedom of Speech Clause of the First Amendment. In an 8-1 decision delivered by Chief Justice Roberts, the court held that Section 48 is substantially overbroad and therefore invalid under the First Amendment. Justice Alito filed a dissenting opinion. To discuss the case, we have Winston & Strawn litigation attorney Jacob R. Lotion. Mr. Lotion was on an amicus brief in support of the respondent for the case. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Lotion.
On Tuesday, the Supreme Court decided the case of United States v. Stevens. In an 8-1 decision, authored by Chief Justice Roberts, the court struck down a federal statute criminalizing visual depictions of animal cruelty, finding that the statute violated the First Amendment. First, a little background. Congress enacted the statute at issue in 1999 out of concern over something called crush videos. Crush videos appealed to what a House committee politely characterized as a very specific sexual fetish. Crush videos depicted women crushing small animals to death with their feet, often in high heels. But Congress did not simply prohibit the underlying acts depicted on these videos, nor did Congress simply pass a law outlawing crush videos. Instead, Congress went quite a bit further. Congress made it a federal felony to knowingly create, sell, or possess a depiction of animal cruelty, any depiction of animal cruelty. And it defined animal cruelty very broadly as anything where a living animal is, quote, maimed, mutilated, tortured, wounded, or killed. To that broad prohibition, Congress also added two exceptions. First, the depicted conduct had to be illegal under the law of the state in which it was created or under the law of the state in which it was possessed or sold, but not necessarily both. And second, the depicted conduct was exempted if it had serious religious, political, scientific, educational, journalistic, historical, or artistic value. 5 years after this statute was enacted, the government indicted Robert Stevens, not for selling crush videos, but for producing and selling documentaries containing footage of dogfighting. Stevens had not taken the dogfighting footage himself, and dogfighting had been legal at the time and place the footage was filmed. But because it was illegal in Virginia, where Stevens sold his videos, it fell within the statute. Stevens was ultimately convicted and sentenced to over 3 years in prison, and his First Amendment challenge to his conviction eventually landed in the Supreme Court. Now, with a statute designed to target crush videos, and a defendant prosecuted under that statute for depicting dogfighting, one might assume that the court's recent decision actually decided whether the First Amendment protects crush videos or dogfighting depictions. But the court studiously avoided that narrow question, and instead decided this case by addressing two issues of more fundamental significance to First Amendment doctrine. The first issue was a threshold question of whether depictions of animal cruelty constitute a new category of unprotected speech, falling outside the scope of the First Amendment. One of the first forks in the winding road of First Amendment jurisprudence is the question of whether the content of speech is protected or unprotected. If it's protected, restrictions on that speech must pass the demanding test of strict scrutiny. But if it's unprotected, the government can suppress the speech with a much freer hand. Historically, the list of unprotected categories has been limited. Principally, it has included incitement, fighting words, defamation, and obscenity. And depictions of animal cruelty do not fit into any of those historic categories. But the government took an aggressive position in this case by urging the court to recognize a new category of unprotected speech, relying on dicta from a 1942 decision, Chaplinsky v. New Hampshire. The government argued that any given category of speech is unprotected if the value of the speech is outweighed by its societal costs. And so speech depicting animal cruelty is unprotected, in the government's view, because its costs outweigh its expressive benefits. The court, however, resoundingly rejected that argument. the thought of reducing First Amendment doctrine to a simple cost-benefit analysis was, in Chief Justice Roberts' words, startling and dangerous. As Roberts put it, quote, "The First Amendment's guarantee of free speech does not extend only to categories of speech that survive an ad hoc balancing of relative social costs and benefits. The First Amendment itself reflects a judgment by the American people that the benefits of its restrictions on the government outweigh the costs," end quote. The court therefore made clear that it has no desire to invent new categories of unprotected speech. Chaplinsky's cost-benefit language was simply a descriptive explanation for the traditional categories that have long existed. It was not, and is not now, in the court's view, an invitation to create new categories. Despite this evident determination to limit categories of unprotected speech to a few historic exceptions, the court was obliged to acknowledge that one existing category is of more recent vintage. In United States v. Ferber, the court had held that child pornography was a category of unprotected speech. The court here explained Ferber as a special case, where speech depicting child pornography was intrinsically related to the underlying criminal conduct. It remains somewhat unclear how far that principle may extend in the future. After all, what precisely does it mean for speech to be integral to criminal conduct? And does this principle apply to all criminal conduct, or just certain particular criminal conduct in which the government has a very strong interest? Indeed, the lone dissenter in this case, Justice Alito, argued that depictions of animal cruelty are integral to actual animal cruelty, most acts of which are criminal. But the majority would not go that far. And so the best explanation here may simply be that child pornography is sui generis. Like Chaplinsky's cost-benefit language, Ferber's refusal to give First Amendment protection to child pornography is not an invitation to limit protections for other activities. This brings us to the second issue of significance to First Amendment doctrine. Having held that depictions of animal cruelty are protected speech within the scope of the First Amendment, the ordinary next step would have been to decide whether application of the statute to crush videos and dogfighting depictions is unconstitutional. But the court chose not to do that. Instead, the court struck the entire statute down as facially overbroad. Justice Alito notes in dissent that the overbreath doctrine has been deemed, quote, strong medicine, to be taken rarely. In this case, however, the majority was eager to prescribe it. Whatever the merits of applying the statute to crush videos and dogfighting depictions, the court was troubled chiefly by the fact that the statute criminalized so much more. The court reasoned that all kinds of constitutionally protected speech would be swept up by the statute, from hunting magazines and videos to depictions of certain kinds of livestock slaughter. And because the statute required only that the depicted conduct be illegal in the state in which it was created or possessed, but not both, it led to perverse results. Someone in Nebraska could be convicted of a federal crime for possessing a video depicting conduct illegal only in California. And someone in California could be convicted for possessing a video filmed in Nebraska where the conduct was perfectly legal. It is a troubling sort of statute that criminalizes speech more heavily than it criminalizes conduct. But that's what this statute did. The government urged the court to save the statute from overbreath by construing it narrowly, and the disagreement between the majority of the court and Justice Alito turns primarily on whether such narrowing construction can be done. Although the statute ostensibly prohibits depictions of animal cruelty, it defines animal cruelty very broadly, as including anything that wounds or kills an animal. And although the statute has an exemption for depictions that have serious religious, political, scientific, educational, journalistic, historical, or artistic value, a great deal of speech does not have such serious value. Indeed, most speech is not so solemn. Hunting videos, for example, are often simply for entertainment. They may not have serious educational value. And although a serious value exception may save a statute in the context of obscenity, Chief Justice Roberts warns that serious value is not, a, quote, a general precondition to protecting other types of speech in the first place. And just as the court was unwilling to save this statute by construing it narrowly, it was also unwilling to tolerate a broad criminal statute by trusting in prosecutorial discretion. The government attempted to reassure the court that it had taken a narrow view of the statute and had no intention of bringing prosecutions based on a more expansive view. Roberts noted that the government hits this theme of prosecutorial discretion hard. The court, however, hit back just as hard. It warned, "The First Amendment does not leave us at the mercy of noblesse oblige. We would not uphold an unconstitutional statute merely because the government promised to use it responsibly," end quote. Indeed, the court suggested that the government may not have used its discretion responsibly in this case. After all, it used a statute enacted to combat crush videos to prosecute someone for selling documentaries about dogfighting. In sum, the court's recent decision is significant in two respects. First, it shows that an overwhelming majority of justices have no appetite for adding new categories to the existing list of categories of unprotected speech. And second, the decision signals a willingness to prescribe the strong medicine of the overbreath doctrine. The court will not bend a statute to construe it narrowly, nor will it trust in prosecutorial discretion. Only Congress can fix the statute. But the court did not answer the key question Congress may now be asking. If it drafts a narrower statute, criminalizing only crush videos or even dogfighting depictions, will that statute survive a future First Amendment challenge? From the firm and nearly unanimous decision in this case, it's hard to tell. One suspects, however, that the future is likely to be much less unanimous.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.